This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. The place you call home, do you enjoy the time you spend there? Does it offer refuge, comfort? Does it reflect who you are? Our guest in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine is interior designer Alexandra Stoddard. She believes homes that are beautiful and practical reflect not just the way we live, but our deepest selves. She says, however humble or transient, the home is the best place to start living happier, more meaningful, and honest lives. This afternoon, we'll talk with her about making our houses and apartments our homes. Listeners, do call us with your questions and comments. Here are our telephone numbers in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else in Illinois or Indiana, call toll-free 1-800-222-9455, 1-800-222-WILL. Alexandra Stoddard has more than 36 years' experience in the design business. She has designed the interiors of mansions and embassies, as well as cottages and one-room studio apartments. She's the author of 20 books, including Open Your Eyes and The Decoration of Houses. Her latest book is Feeling at Home, Defining Who You Are and How You Want to Live. Feeling at Home is published by William Morrow. Again, our telephone numbers in Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 1-800-222-WILL. Alexandra Stoddard, good afternoon. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Celeste. I'm awfully glad to be on your show this afternoon.
Oh, well, thanks for joining us. You say something very interesting in this book. Well, you say lots of interesting things in this book. Feeling at home. But this is what I want to begin with. You say, ultimately, home is inside each of us. What does it mean to feel at home?
To feel whole and connected, that we're all together as one family, to feel love and feel centered. I think that home is a metaphor, really, for finding our true spiritual centers.
Mm-hmm. What are the most common complaints you hear people voice about their homes?
That they're homeless in their own houses. They don't feel a spirit of place. They don't feel that they're connected to the energy around them. That they're not expressing themselves. It's sad to think that so many people have been outer or other directed instead of inner directed. Interior design is an inward outward process.
Mm. We're so busy. I think this is part of the problem. We're asked to multitask all the time.
That's a wonderful expression, multitask.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Celeste, I'm very centered in my joy of wanting to live every moment as fully as possible. And if we try to do more than one thing at a time, we're always going to be frustrated. And a lot of people talk on their cell phone while they're with their children or at the dinner table. It just doesn't really work because you have to engage your mind, your intellect, your body, your physical part of you, and your spirit, your soul. And you have to do this in unison so that you feel in tune and in touch with your higher power.
Yeah. Talk with us about how you handle the telephone. I think you have a wonderful attitude about the telephone.
I think that voicemail is a wonderful, wonderful thing. At first, I didn't like it because I couldn't talk to a human voice.
Mm-hmm.
But now I think it's really a great blessing because you don't have to have a body sitting in an office as a slave answering the phone and saying she's not available. But at a certain time, you can sit and have your herbal tea and listen to wonderful classical music, Beethoven, Mozart, whoever you really love, and just answer your calls one by one and feel that this is a joyful experience and an opportunity to connect with people that you care about. And so I think that it's really kind of a wonderful thing not to be a victim of the phone ringing and interrupting you, because I'm a writer and I'm a thinker and I need time to contemplate and meditate, and I don't like constant interruptions.
Yeah. I think the answering machine is a wonderful thing.
I really do. I used to have a secretary, then I had a woman answering machine. Now I have this wonderful thing that just does it for me, and any time I can access it, but I don't have to when I'm doing something else.
Yeah. You know, thinking about my home, my house. I'm thinking after looking at your book that I think I would like to take more control of the telephone. I think I might like to find a cupboard or build a cupboard to put the phone in so that it is, it sort of sticks out now as a sore thumb.
Well, you know, I've had clients that have telephones in their living room, and I totally disapprove of that, the way I disapprove of having televisions in the bedroom, because the bedroom is your high altar. It's your spiritual sanctuary within your home. And if you have football games going and all that confusion, there's no way you're going to connect with your husband or your love or even with yourself. But most people have televisions everywhere, and they also have telephones in every room, and these cordless phones that are beeping. I lecture a lot, and people have to, when they introduce my talks, they always say, please turn off your cell phones, and they beep even then. And apparently in churches they beep. It's gotten to be a little bit out of control.
Yeah. Also, it seems to me we're living with an awful lot of clocks.
Well, I love clocks. My husband is a clock collector, and it's interesting that you say that. When I give my presentations, my slide presentations for Feeling at Home, Defining Who You Are and How You Want to Live, I show all these clocks, and they're not synchronized, so they're all set beautifully at a different time. I said, when I married Peter, I said, Peter, why do you have all these carriage clocks? And you wind them up with your key so lovingly, and he said, he looked at me and sort of smiled, and he said, but darling, it's later than you think. I think clocks are symbolic because I love timeless moments, when I'm out of body, out of time, and the only way to have those is to be passionate about what you're experiencing each moment. And I think that we do live by the clock too much, but I think also that it's good for us to realize that clocks are man-made objects, and they're not part of the true eternity message that we can all be tapping into.
Yeah. Do you think we spend enough time at home?
No. Not only do I not think we spend enough time at home, I think that we take our home for granted, and we make it a work trap, and we have chores to do, and we cross them off on our to-do list instead of having grace notes that we could celebrate each thing we do. For instance, I really love everything I do. And my readers say, but you can't love doing the laundry. But I love my family, and if I'm doing my husband's pajamas, it's really not a chore. They're sort of red and white stripe or blue and white stripe. And I like them, and I like my husband, and I like folding them, and I like smelling the lemon scent Tide. I just enjoy the process, and I roll them up so that they match, and I put them in a little basket. It's not a chore for me. I love home as an expression of our love of life. And if we don't like the things we do at home, we're not going to spend time at home.
Yeah. I said to my husband the other day, let's run away together and stay home.
In my book, Living Beautifully Together, that came out in 1989, I talked about the whole idea of having vacations at home, buying a few magazines, getting some wonderful sort of delicacies in the house, and just holing up and wearing your pajamas in your bathroom and just pretending you're in some fabulous suite and some wonderful, we call sometimes our New York apartment the Carlisle, because the Carlisle Hotel is sort of one of our best hotels in New York. And it's so much fun because you can pretend, you can put a Sonia Rose on your own breakfast tray. You don't have to wait for room service to do it. It's sort of a wake-up call to realize that the things that we love to luxuriate in when we're on vacation, when we're getting away from the stress, we can tap in to the joy of just being instead of doing.
Having a pajama day.
Having a pajama day. That's what I wrote about. And a lot of my friends and clients say, I'm having an Alexander Soder day. I think one of my strengths as a thinker and a communicator and writer is that I give people permission. I affirm and confirm people in their own lives. A lot of people are reticent to do the simplest things that are going to bring them daily pleasure. It's not, my feeling is that life is not, we are not here on earth to plan for tomorrow. We're here to live today. If we live one day beautifully, it's a microcosm of our entire lives, of our value system, our character, how we want to make a contribution. it's so important for us to realize that there's no better time. We're using that word time again, but there's no better moment than right now, the present, because it's a gift.
Mm. In Feeling at Home, you suggest a simple exercise as a way to begin thinking about how to make a space our own. Would you tell us about that exercise?
Celeste, when my daughter left college in Ohio, she went to Paris to live and be. She always wanted to be in Paris. She went there when she was 5. And when she was 22 years old, she sat in a cafe and she wrote down the 10 defining words that were symbolic of who she is. And words have energy. They're symbols. They have vibrations. There are no casual words. And she wrote down her 10 words. Her name is Brooke. She's now senior editor at House and Garden magazine. And her words are inspiration, Paris, flowers, beauty, design, the color blue, elephants, light, artists, and creativity. And when I was telling her that I was writing a book about how we all want to feel at home, inside our hearts and souls and inside our physical dwellings that we shape and create, and then in turn they shape and create us, surrounding ourselves in a circle of love with the objects that are meaningful to us, and inanimate objects become animate because we love them so. She asked my husband and me to do this exercise, and we were sitting in a New York cafe, a little bistro, and I wrote down mine separately, and Peter wrote down his separately, and it's so amazing. Peter and I are, my husband Peter Brown and I are soulmates, but we, 3 of our 10 words were exactly the same, and the first word of mine was love, and the first word of Peter's was love, and mine, another word that Peter loves is beaches, and one of mine is beaches. And one of mine is children, and one of his is children. So we have 3 identical words, which is sort of beautiful, because we've been married for 25 years. I met Peter when I was 13. 20 years later, we got married. So we've really had quite a journey together so far, and joined our children and our families. And so I ask everybody, I urge everybody, to write their 10 words down that define their personality traits and who they are in essence. And I've gotten this outpouring of love from people, young children, 8 years old, old people, everybody's doing it, and they say that their heart swells. And if you really know my words, love, sunshine, gardens, beaches, children, food, family, color, ribbons, and home, you know everything there is to know about me. Mm. And when you come into my home, you're not going to see dark, dreary rooms.
Mm.
You're going to see sunlight and flowers and love everywhere, and children's little hands that they did, the little clay hands that they do that are red or blue or green when they're 4 or 5 years old, and good smells coming out of the kitchen. You're going to see color everywhere. Ribbons are important to me because they're symbolic of my mother. When I was a little girl, she used to braid my hair and my sister's hair, and it was sort of time with my mother, and then I did it in turn for my 2 daughters. And we have ribbons tied on everything, and ribbon chintzes, and I just love the whole idea. My father, 1 year, he was in the fashion world, and he had red ribbons on our Christmas tree 1 year, and I, as a little girl, I just remember how outstanding that was. So every I think it's really important for us to know in our core, in our essence, in our heart and soul, truly who are we, and then we can shape and form our surroundings to reflect our passions and our true individuality.
Yeah, it's interesting that you have an item on your list from your childhood, and your daughter has an item on her list.
Elephants.
Yeah,
she never played with dolls ever, not once. And we were in a hotel in Spain, and we said, look under the bed, children. And Brooke forgot to look. She looked under the bed, but she forgot to look under her pillow for her Ellie. She loved her elephant so much, her little stuffed elephant, that she had it under her pillow, sort of under her covers. And she sort of never got over that. But she loves elephants in every form. She has elephant paperweights, elephant bookends, elephant scars. I mean, everything in her apartment is reflects her love of this animal. She's never been on a human elephant, but she loves them, and she loves the idea that when the trunk is up, it's good luck. And so that's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's very interesting.
And then my husband's, one of his is old friends. Peter's are love, beaches, old friends, children, reading. dancing, music, thank the good Lord, because I love to dance and I love music, wine, lunch, and memories. Peter, when he talks about old friends, he was at Yale University in New Haven, Connecticut, when the World War II broke out, and when his friends went off to war, they all made a pact that everybody who survived would come back and stay together and stick together and make the world a better place. And they all became public servants. They all really have done the most extraordinary job. John Lindsay was mayor of New York. John Chafee, who just died about a month ago, was a dear, dear friend of Peter's, a senator from Rhode Island. Ambassador Curley, ambassador to Ireland and to France. Bill McCumber was president of the Metropolitan Museum. All doing different things, all following their own bliss, but all making real major lasting contributions to our society. And I think it's so beautiful. And Peter, his old friends are his true, true blessed friends. And he's chums with these people. They matter to him. He has framed pictures of them all over floor to ceiling, from the baseboard to the cornice molding of all his friends and the people that he loves. So I think our words really have powerful impact on our lives.
Hmm.
I would love to have your listeners write their words to me.
That would be great. Do you have an address?
I have an address.
Okay.
1125 Park Avenue, New York, New York, 10128, Suite 6A.
Okay, and we'll give that address again a little later in the program. This is an exercise you don't want to think about too much.
No, it's beyond your ego, because your ego plays tricks on you. Your ego thinks about yourself, power, what other people think. This is, comes from your pure consciousness. It's a higher, higher state of awareness. And you can do it in 30 seconds. It's beyond thinking.
Yeah.
It's when you leave your self behind and you tap into the self with a capital S. It's beautiful.
Hmm. Our guest this afternoon on the Afternoon Magazine, Alexandra Stoddard. We're talking with her about Feeling at Home, which is the title of her new book, Feeling at Home, Defining Who You Are and How You Want to Live. If you'd like to join the conversation, we'd love to hear from you this afternoon. Here are the telephone numbers in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Anywhere else you're listening, call us toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Of course, the words on lists change over time. I suspect, though, that our homes don't change as often as our lists change.
That's the sad thing, to have your home stuck in another era. We're growing and evolving spiritually every single day, and we're connecting synchronistically to these awesome, awesome experiences that seem like coincidences and they're really not. We connect to an object that is a symbol of something that's very near and dear to us. For example, I love fountain pens and paperweights and ink pots because I'm a writer and I write longhand. I do not write on a computer. So all of a sudden you find something that just makes your heart flutter and the hair stand up in the back of your neck, and you get that energy flowing through your body and you realize there's something there. A painting, you fall in love with a painting. I recommend that we all change our objects around, change the paintings on our wall, move our furniture around. And really, in my book, Feeling at Home, I urge the reader to reevaluate how their consciousness and how they really want to spend their time and what they want to do at home, because there's a lot of stuff around. A lot of people set up still lives. They set up a dining room they never use. They set up a living room that's a dead room. They misinterpret the value of what it's like to really live and breathe and have your being and have your home be a vibration and an energy essence of who you are. It's so important to tap into this.
Yeah. My mother-in-law says, you've got to stir it up.
You got to stir it up. I love that.
You got to stir up your stuff.
Yeah, you've got to stir up your stuff.
I suspect that home changes for us in this regard. We keep getting more stuff.
Well, I'm a great believer in upgrading. I think that when we start out in our lives, we definitely go to the Salvation Army and we go to Goodwill Industry and we get some really disgustingly ugly stuff, and we paint it a cheerful color, and we make the best of what we have because we're on minimum wage and we're doing the best we can. I mean, I went to the New York School of Interior Design on a full scholarship, and I'm very proud to say that in the back flap of my book it says that I'm the first recipient of the New York School of Interior Design on a full scholarship. And you can't have the things that really do, the physical objects around you that are as beautiful as your soul wants them to be all the time. But even then, you can live with expressing yourself. Because I've never, even with red burlap curtains for $5.99 from Bloomingdale's, I've never, department store, I've never felt deprived. I mean, you can always cheer up any space that you live in and make it really, really wonderful. But I believe in upgrading. I wouldn't want to now, at this stage in my life, I'm sort of glad that I have some refinements. Everything's very, very simple, there's some things that I'm glad to give up, and I think that's a wonderful way to realize that it's Aristotle. Once you know, then you have to act. And if you see something that's really profoundly ugly and you no longer need it in your life, you'd rather go without and just let there be space to breathe than to have something that it's giving you negative energy. So I think that we should change our objects, because our objects should be reflective of where we are and who we are becoming.
Yeah. There are photographs of some of the rooms in your New York apartment in the book. And it's very clear looking at these photographs of your home that flowers, color, light, and warmth are very important to you. And but where I want to go here now is talk with you a little bit about your bedroom. You've come up with a great way to change the look of the room, you know, when you'd like to, very simply and very economically, with sheets.
We have a four-poster bed. I actually designed the bed. It's Canadian maple. It's very, very simple, and we just throw some beautiful sheets over the bed hangings. And then when you want to change your bed linen, you can just fold up the sheets and put them in the linen closet and get out another set. It's a wonderful, wonderful, inexpensive thing, because if you don't want to hang them over your bedpost, you can put them on the bed. Put them in a child's room. Voila.
Right. I think when it comes to the idea of decorating, we can get ourselves all tied up, afraid of making a mistake or feeling unsure about how something will turn out, or being overwhelmed by the possibilities.
Right. I think that decorating has been completely people are misguided about the way they think about decorating, because they worry about the house, the room. The north wall in their living room, I need a high piece here, I need a focal point there. That's fine, and all of that is information that's available. But first you need inspiration. You need to have some urge to really feel at home, to know yourself and to have self-attunement. And it's really 95% of our lives are spent at home with ourselves and our family, and only 5% with others. So the ghosts on your back worrying about what others are going to think about how you live is really very, very misguided, because if you're happy at home, your friends, and I wouldn't really want other people than people that love you to be in your home, because otherwise you could go to a hotel or to a restaurant. If you had to have a meeting, you could have a business meeting in an office, but you shouldn't have people in your house that are not loving and supportive of you. And I think it should be a sanctuary, and so you should do it for yourself, and let people really get a very, very intimate vision of who you are, what books you like to read, what art you like to expose yourself to, what colors you love, and it's something you can't find in magazines and books. It has to come from within, and you have to build on your passions, and that's why these 10 words are so important. The bedroom that you referred to in my book has the sheets are wonderful, but they're flowered. And there are fresh flowers at the foot of our bed. We always wake up in the morning to beautiful fresh flowers and a beautiful French provincial table at the foot of our bed. And it's the last thing we see before we go to bed, because that's from nature. That's from the Creator. That's not man-made. Mm. It's important to reflect on that every day.
And in your living room?
Oh, our living room is just filled with chintz. It's just beautiful. We have pale You have pale peony pink walls, shiny lacquered walls, lots of mirrors, and it's just a wonderful. We have our favorite artist painting, Roger Moule. He only paints the light, and he uses color. He only wants to paint the joy of life, and he's a wonderful, wonderful man. It's very prolific. He paints like the wind, very simple paintings, but they always show the juiciness of life, of nature, the sky, the water, everything's clear and sun-drenched. And that's the way I want to live. That's my spirit.
Hmm. We've talked about the list as a tool to get us going, but there are lots of wonderful questions that you ask clients, and some of them are rather pointed, but I think we should begin with some of the very basic questions to think about that we can ask ourselves to begin with when it comes to beginning the process of redesigning or designing a space.
Well, the first thing I think is to ask yourself sort of where do you spend your time. What's your favorite room? What are the activities that you really love to do? Do you love to cook? Do you love to read? Do you love to listen to music? Do you like to sit out on the porch? Just, in other words, where are you drawn and why? And how can we enhance these places and these spaces and have them be more meaningful to you? In Chapter 2 of the book, you probably enjoyed that interview that I had with the family.
Yes.
And I ask all kinds of questions, and by interviewing the wife and the husband and the daughter and the son separately, I was able to get all kinds of information that they weren't able to find out on their own as a family. It's sort of interesting. It's by taking things apart, you can put them together in a more synergistic way. But the questions that you want to ask are you know, how much time do you spend at home? Do you spend enough time at home? Do you think that if you made some changes, you would want to spend more time at home? What's not working for you? What is working? How do you just the whole scenarios of what time do you get up in the morning and what kind of breakfast do you have? These are important issues because you want to be sure that there's a little breakfast table if you like to sit there and read the paper and be with your family at breakfast. You can't have a counter where you're lined up as if you're in a diner. So lots of these questions that I ask, that sometimes I like to ask, what do you do at 10 o'clock on Saturday morning? And if they say they go out for a jog with their dog, and then I go into their home and I see that their living room looks like it's a room out of Versailles Palace in France, I wonder, well, is this living room a real living room, or would it be fun to sit down on the sofa in the living room with your sweats on after you've come in for a walk with your dog and just hug your dog? Your beautiful golden retriever. I mean, isn't the living room for him too? And if you have children, isn't the living room for them? I mean, they're God's angels. Why wouldn't you want them to play in the living room? So I don't understand why. I do understand why people are so reticent to express themselves, because we all want to be loved, and people feel that they might be rejected if they're not, if they have. Express their unique style, but whenever we are authentically true to ourselves, people really feel that radiant energy and feel that spirit, and people are very accepting of authenticity.
Yeah, it's really fascinating to see the possibilities open up for this family.
Yes, I think I agree. The living room was awful, awful, and the dining room, and we changed that and made that a garden room, and the dining room was never used, and so we were by removing one wall, opening it up to the kitchen breakfast area, we were able to maintain a beautiful dining room that's used. And I love the fact that the surgeon comes home for lunch now.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, because it was his dream to always have a dining room, but it was never used, and now he's making up for it by loving the light and the openness and the way it feels.
Yeah. There was an ad on television a few years back. I don't remember what they were selling, but it was a couple sitting in the dining room, and they're looking around as they're eating, and one says to the other, "So, this is the dining room."
I've done a survey. I've interviewed thousands of families, and a husband will tell me, separately from the wife, and I've come down with the saddest statistic that only 2 weeks out of the year the dining room is used by many Americans. It's just unbelievable.
Hmm.
But by putting bookcases in the dining room, it making the table a study hall area for the children, a place to do creative crafts and do art projects, it's just a wonderful possibility.
Yeah. Also, in this family's life, in this family's home, there is a guest room, but nary a guest in sight.
Right. She's a journalist, and she works all the time, and she's raising these two teenage children, and she doesn't want to have guests. She loves to cook, but she has that five-hour limit, and I know it because I'm a writer, too. I love to cook and have my friends over, but then I want them to go home. Because I've got to go to bed early because I have to get up early to write. So she doesn't want to have them sleeping late and hanging around and wondering where's breakfast. And so by turning the beds into day beds, we created a fabulous home office for her that she desperately needed, and then her mother-in-law can come when she wants to.
Yeah. There's a growing number of people who earn their living at home. Does that present special challenges for home?
A growing number of people who are living at home?
Who are earning their living at home.
Who are working at home.
Oh,
well, I work at home. I didn't used to, but I finally saw the light. I used to have an office, and I would come back from a wonderful business trip, and I'd come back, and I'd have suitcases all over the hall, and mail unopened and bills, and then I would have to get up at the crack of dawn and go to an office. And I didn't even have the time to do my wash or have my dry cleaning picked up. And so it was just a frantic kind of existence. And I know that a lot of people have to go to an office. But as a writer and a thinker and a lecturer, I really don't have to go to an office. And so I think working at home is a wonderful way to integrate your energy and to save a lot of time, energy, and money. And I'm in full agreement of it. A lot of people think, oh, that's terrible, you shouldn't bring your work home.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't love your work, then there's something, a major conflict in your harmony and your inner peace. Because if you don't love your work, there's no way you can find happiness in the evening when you come home feeling defeated, being you know, resisting everything all day long. So you have to love your work, and if you don't, you have to find a way to find work that you do love. So working at home just makes your home all the sweeter.
Mm.
I can work at the kitchen table.
Right.
Because I don't know I'm working. Because I would do what I do if I didn't earn a living from it. And the thing is that I think that my mentor, Mrs. Brown, my former boss and mentor, she was born in 1890, and she was a great, great lady and a grande dame and the doyen of American interior design. And she said, do a good job and the money follows. And I think you can't do a good job if you're not passionate, if your heart and soul isn't in your work. Work is very important to me. It's central because it's our way of giving back to society for the gift of our life.
Mm. Let's go back to this family of four that you worked with, and the interview is included in the book. There's a wrinkle that comes along, which you're very good at smoothing out. You know, Diane is interested. This is the client, one of the clients here. Diane and John are the couple. Diane would love to have that wall torn out between
right.
the kitchen and the dining room.
Right.
But she's concerned that her husband won't like the idea because he, as you mentioned earlier, you know, always wanted to have a dining room.
He was a poor boy growing up, and he always wanted to have an elegant dining room where we could sit down and have a proper meal with his family.
So how do you go back and forth between these two and negotiate, you know, sort of lead them to the solution without, you know?
Well, it was really quite remarkable to see the transformation of spirit, because he really wanted his dining room, but he didn't want it to be a still life. He wanted to dine in the dining room. And as a surgeon, he doesn't cook. He couldn't figure out. He couldn't prod his wife to go in there because there was a emotional
yeah.
barrier and a physical barrier of that wall. And it was just too much effort to go around that wall and bring in all those dishes and bring in all that and do all that setting of the table and clearing the table. And she loves to cook. And it was just like a light going off. It was sort of a eureka moment when I just gently asked him if he would, because Diane, of course, as you know, was completely sold on the idea and thrilled. And I thought that he would think that it wasn't formal enough. But we maintained all of the furniture. It's just as formal. It just has more light, more air, and more space.
Mm.
So it was a joyful, that was a joyful.
Yeah. Here's another issue that will come up. You, throughout the book, want to tell us, or do tell us, you want us to know that we shouldn't pre-compromise.
Right. I went to a lecture when I was 16 years old. I was on a full scholarship, as I told you, in the New York School of Interior Design. I went to a lecture by Dorothy Draper, a famous designer. And she stood up there and she belted out something that I will never forget. She said, "Don't design scared. Dream. Are all of us going to have dreams? If you told me that I would live the life that I'm leading, being able to be of help to other people, writing books, I never thought, I always believed in myself, but I never thought that I would be in the position I'm in now. And all I had to do was write my first book and people responded. So I would love your listeners to know that whatever they want out of their house, if they really truly want it, they can turn it into their dream house in their home. And there are no limits, there are no barriers. There's just infinite energy that will go toward them as long as they're dedicated and focused on their goals and their dreams.
Mm. Now I can sense a lot of folks going, "Oh yeah, right."
Well, a lot of people are cynical because a lot of people are discouraged. Their life hasn't worked out just perfectly. They've got a spouse that's not that supportive. They've got the money problems. These are all universal situations. I'm not talking about pie in the sky here. I'm talking about really simple things. If you really, truly love your garden and you truly, truly want your garden to be part of your experience, you can punch a hole in from your living room to your garden so that you can see, you can open the door and you can have your garden part of your living room. This is not an expensive thing to do. This is a few hundred dollars.
Hmm.
In other words, people are so afraid that they think, "Oh, this is going to be so expensive." Putting an extra outlet on an electrical outlet so that it's convenient for you to have a good reading light next to your chair. This can change your life. This is $60. In other words, the wiring is already there. These are not expensive things. These are practical ways to make your daily life more pleasant and more meaningful and more productive.
Yeah, it's kind of a step by step.
It is a step by step. For example, there's that really lovely library in our apartment, but it has shutters that look as though there's some fabulous garden beyond. It's all lit by artificial lighting, but it's really the euphemism is called courtyard. But it's not a courtyard. It's a back alley from another building in New York City. It's a back rear end of another building. It has pigeons back there. It's disgusting. But by having this artificial light, it's tubular light that's actually incandescent light. I do not like fluorescent light, and I will go on any kind of broadcast to say that it's not consistent light, so it gives you hypertension. I just do not like it. But there's a wonderful new kind of lighting that's called microsun, and it makes you feel as though you're absolutely in the sunlight. And it's a very, very beautiful new lighting. And there are all kinds of full spectrum bulbs that you can buy in a hardware store. So light is one of my we haven't really talked about my 15 defining elements of feeling at home, but light is one of the most urgent necessities in any environment where people are going to feel joy in their daily lives. Light is life. Light is energy. And seasonal affective disorder is not a rare disorder. And in your climate, as well as ours in New England, you have days and weeks where you don't have enough light. And people are deprived. And you have to bring it into your home.
Yeah. I love Your kitchen.
I love our kitchen, too.
And at once, I mean, it's so inviting, but the audience should know this is not a huge space.
No, it's not a huge space at all. But by putting a big picture window in to bring in more light and openness, and I have a ficus tree that was in our daughter's. It cost $9.99, and we got it at a grocery store.
Well, you got a green thumb.
Well, it's the light. It's the light.
It's the light.
You can see it's the cork floor. The kitchen is not a big space, but it's, the wonderful thing about it is that it's organic. In other words, it has blue wood cabinets, white rough stucco walls to remind us of the south of France, and a pale blue, really pretty heavenly blue cabinets that remind us of the sky and the water on a clear day. Lots of mirrors, colored glass, the backsplash of our 2-inch thick scrubbed natural butcher block counters, an antique table, little antique footstool, lots of copper pots on the wall. But to have beautiful things in your kitchen, art, real art. A lot of people think, oh, you can't have real art in your kitchen. But if it's the most important room in your house, and that's where you gather together as a family and good smells come out of it, it's where you arrange your flowers, where you sit at the kitchen table and talk, that's where your art should be. And with good fans and ventilation, it's fine.
Yeah. What's good for the tree is...
What's good for the tree is good for us.
That's right.
And if you can't grow a tree in your kitchen, then you have to wonder how you're doing spiritually.
Well, it's a wonderful space. And I really like the idea of all the reflective spaces. The light is very lively.
Well, even we have a lot of watercolors in the kitchen, and so when you're not directly looking at the watercolor, you actually see the reflection of the light. So it is wonderful.
Yeah. Let's talk about it. We've talked about light, but maybe you would share a couple of your other essential elements for emotional comfort with us.
Positive energy. Positive energy is something that very few people understand, that if you don't think happy thoughts and think constructive, positive thoughts in your home is going to take on negative vibrations. And it's the Chinese, the ancient art of feng shui, the art of harmony and placement. Do you think that your listeners are familiar with feng shui?
Perhaps, but maybe you could...
Well, intuitively, if you find that something in your house doesn't feel right, I suggest that you correct it and do something to make it better. Intuitively, you will know what to do. If there's a harsh edge that makes you feel sort of uptight, then put a flowering plant in front of it, or a plant, or a tree, or a mirror to soften that energy. But it's very important to realize that the things that are unseen are just as important as the man-made, tangible, physical objects that you see with your eyes and you can touch with your hands and you can smell. I think it's very, very important to realize that we have the energy, the spirit world is strong and pervasive. And in our home, it's very important to have things around that really give you wonderful feelings, and including people. The people that you're with in your house will affect the energy tremendously. We have the power to create our own atmosphere and have the things around us increase our vitality.
The time is gone.
I can't believe it.
I can't either.
I want to come back on your show.
I'd love to have you back.
Good.
Would you offer us your address again? And
yes.
This is for the list of ten things.
The words of who you are and how you want to live. My address is 1125 Park Avenue, New York, New York, 10128, Suite 6A. And if anyone wants to check my website, it's alexandrastoddard.com.
Okay. Thank you so much for talking with us this afternoon.
Well, thank you very much, Celeste.
It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Alexandra Stoddard has been our guest this afternoon. Her latest book is Feeling at Home, Defining Who You Are and How You Want to Live.